No matter how much or how little your life has changed in the last 8 months, one thing that's remained a necessity for everyone and a comfort for most of us, I think, food. And some of us might find this relatable.
No. That's impossible. You can't be out of food. What? Where's my personal reserve of moose juice and goose juice? My emergency stash of hoo hash? My secret slew of frozen beazle nut stew? I specifically bought enough food to last until January. How much emotional eating have I been doing?
That's from the 2018 rendition of the Grinch movie. And maybe you, like the Grinch, have been reaching for comfort food, emotional eating, stocking up the pantry. You're not alone. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. What has been a comfort food for you in the last few months? Have you found yourself doing some emotional eating? What's become a go-to food to make and or eat in the last few months? How has food shaped your life since the pandemic started? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Emily Contois is an assistant professor of media studies at the University of Tulsa. She explores the connections between food, the body, and health, and identities in contemporary U.S. media and popular culture. Her new book is called Diners, Dudes, and Diets, How Gender and Power Collide in Food, Media, and Culture. Emily, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me back.
Well, I know you look a lot at what the food we eat says about who we are. What are you seeing? What kind of trends and changes have you seen in this weird year of 2020?
So I love that we're focusing on comfort food. I had to hold in my laughter when we were listening to that clip from The Grinch, but I think it is so relatable that this has been a really hard year for those of us eating, that we've had to give up, a lot of us, right? Going to restaurants for safety. Some of us have leaned in to new skills at home, whether it was getting, you know, very into baking, making our own sourdough bread. And then some of us, right, this has been so exhausting and so hard that we are turning to some of those like family favorites or childhood favorites for that comfort, that we've seen, you know, big changes in how we shop, how we eat, where we eat, who we eat with. I mean, name the change. We've seen it in 2020.
And now that was from a movie in 2018, that Grinch we heard there. But it rings especially true now. We all have those moments where we want to eat a particular thing in a moment of stress, but we've had a year of stress in a lot of ways. How does that affect the choices we make?
Absolutely. So emotional eating from a, you know, public health standpoint, right? We're often encouraged to be in tune with our emotions, right? To think about how and why we're eating, trying to guide ourselves to make healthful choices. But the fact is that turning to food in these moments that have been so hard is very human, right? Maybe I will be too generous with all of our listeners, but you have my permission, right? To be able to reach for that cookie, or to have that favorite snack, to make your grandma's recipe for mac and cheese, that it makes a lot of physiological, psychological, and social sense that we turn to food to be able to find that comfort, whether it's eating for emotions we're feeling, stress we're experiencing, or out of boredom, right? I think people have experienced the pandemic very differently based upon your job, your social position. All of our experience hasn't been the same. So we could be turning to food in different ways too.
And we've talked to you in the past about our snack choices. Comfort food doesn't necessarily have to be junk food or snacks. Well, let's start with you, Emily. What do you like when you think comfort food? What is in your head?
I do think of those like high fat, high carb things like mac and cheese and mashed potatoes and chips. But there's been really interesting research, right? Thinking about comfort food. And so I think one thing to remember is that it's not culturally homogenous, right? Depending upon our own backgrounds, our families, we might consider, you know, what counts as comfort food really different. But I love these categories that researchers came up with in an article that was in Food and Foodways. And so they categorize food, comfort food, as nostalgic, indulgent, convenient, or providing physical comfort. And so we can see how that would map onto really different foods, some of which could be snacky processed foods, right? That maybe were special treats when we were a kid that bring back that sort of nostalgic sense of comfort. But something that's indulgent, right? That could be something we're spending hours in the kitchen creating or buying from our favorite restaurant. But that idea of convenience, I know we talked about that with snacks as well. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the food that's the most comforting, right, is the one that's convenient, that's going to be easiest for us to pick up for ourselves or to feed our families. And then that idea of physical comfort, right, that we turn to this food because it makes us feel good, to sort of quell those emotions, but also in our bodies, right? There is that sensation of actual comfort.
We're talking to Emily Contois, assistant professor of media studies at the University of Tulsa, looking at how our relationship to food is changing in 2020, especially amidst the pandemic, and especially comfort food, the foods we turn to when times are tough. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What's yours? What is your comfort food? Has it changed? It's been a long stretch here. Have you evolved new kinds of comfort food? Have you learned to make new ones or sought out other ones? Did you start off unhealthy and try to move it up a notch in the health department? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Emily, part of the story here is, you know, we can't necessarily share these foods in person. But we already had a trend, I think, of people sharing their meals on social media. And just from where I'm sitting, that's accelerated a lot. Can you talk about how we are performing our food on social media?
Absolutely. So I always like to say that the idea you are what you eat has transformed into you are what you post, right? It's what we share on social media. That's how we document, you know, some folks, right? That's how we document what we've eaten to be able to share that with the broader world. And so I teach a class on food media where one of the assignments is for the students to have a food Instagram account and sort of experience that if they didn't already take photos of food, to lean into that, to share creations that they cooked that they were proud of. But one of the things the students were kind of nervous about, because we're taking this class this semester, which has been almost entirely right during the pandemic, that they knew they weren't going to be going to restaurants probably and being able to take pictures of what they considered Instagrammable, right, or Insta-worthy food. And so there is this sort of level of expectation of how beautiful, right, the food should be for us to share it. And so we've seen, you know, people taking pictures of the, you know, home cooked creations that they felt like they had new time, new skill, new space to explore and discover, to share that proudly on social media. But it's been interesting to see social media also be a space, you know, sharing when you are eating out. That is, we talk about, you know, different people's comfort level of going out to eat again, of being in public spaces, of thinking about social distancing. Social media has become this interesting space, right, to feel like you're missing out, which was always there. But the pandemic has heightened that in different ways when we think about safety, too.
How about food marketing? Is that something you're watching? And what have you seen, whether it's restaurants or restaurant chains or, you know, packaged food manufacturers or whatever, how are they selling us food, if at all, differently now nowadays?
So food brands, as well as lots of others, when we were first in those months of, you know, lockdown and, you know, really experiencing the beginning of the pandemic in the United States, you see lots of messages of, we are in this together, right? Like, we are going to help you through this. And then there was messaging about how to make sure that food delivery was safe, right? To be able to address consumer concerns about, was it safe to get food delivered from your local restaurant? And that hasn't played out evenly, right? The pandemic has been huge in affecting small businesses, right? Of how many small local restaurants we might lose. But it has been sort of fortuitous for some brands. Domino's, for example, has been able to hire even more workers, right? Like hiring, ordering delivery pizza has definitely been something that folks have been doing, have felt safe doing, and that brand has really leaned into. So it's played out differently depending upon, you know, what food company it is.
We're talking about food and how it's helped us get through 2020. Emily Contois is with us, assistant professor of media studies at the University of Tulsa. Her research explores connections between food and our identities, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Tell us your go-to comfort food or snack. Have you been enjoying some maybe childhood favorites? Have you learned a whole new kitchen skill with your pandemic downtime? And how about emotional eating? Is it a thing for you? It's a thing for me sometimes. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Susie is with us in Williams Bay. Susie, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to share that the first new recipe I tried back last March when the pandemic got going, I tried a recipe for chicken enchiladas, and it turned out just great, and it's just a fun thing to make. It's something out of the ordinary, and it's kind of a go-to recipe now for me.
Fantastic, Susie. And have you tried, like, you know, jazzing it up in different ways, or you stick with the same recipe most times?
Well, sometimes you can vary the type of tortilla you use, maybe a spinach tortilla or a tomato tortilla, something like that. But the filling's basically the same. And you just put the tortillas in a regular glass baking dish and cover it with foil, and you've got delicious chicken enchiladas.
Fantastic. Susie, thanks a lot. And that, Emily, hits a lot of my buttons for comfort food. Warm, tasty, gooey, especially when it's cold now. Get the oven on. I think for a lot of people, that that recipe Susie picked up earlier this year will be comforting.
Absolutely. I agree. A really good one to choose from a nutritional perspective, the textures, the flavors. Now, I bet that would resonate with a lot of people. And interesting to hear, right, that this was the moment that she was going to try something new. I think that's what's been so interesting to see how the pandemic played out differently for different people, whether to go back to tried and true recipes that were from our family or that we're really familiar with, or to try something new. And interesting to have that be, you know, a new recipe for her in her repertoire that she really likes now.
Susie, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Emily, I know early on in the pandemic, we were, you know, stores were running out of things like flour and yeast as people got into baking or back into baking. And one case I heard was, hey, maybe this is, we're a little uncertain about what's going on in the world. We're not sure what's going to happen next. We can take control of this little piece of our life by learning to make this new kind of food for ourselves. Do you think there's anything to that?
I think there's tons to that. We've seen that throughout history. Moments of, you know, significant, you know, social, cultural, economic, political strife are ones in which we often turn inward into our food to find the answers, the control, the connection in the way that we eat, the way we cook, the way we share it with those around us. That because food is so intimate, so special, that it becomes a part of our bodies as we eat it, I think it makes total sense that we try to find that feeling of control, security, and comfort in food.
Susie, thanks a lot again for calling in. We'll go to Lissa now in Partyville. Lissa, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
What do you want to tell us about, Lissa?
So I'm an essential worker, and COVID has just been crazy, pulling us in 10 different directions every day, trying to cover places that have been losing workers left and right because of this. And Quick Trip has been a savior for my family. They have these take-home meals that cover like a whole range with mac and cheese and spaghetti. And I'm an awful cook. And so they've just been a lifesaver for us.
And Lissa, can I ask what kind of work do you do?
I actually work in the convenience store industry for grocery and such.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. A lot of demand for groceries of all sorts. Thanks a lot for calling in, Lissa. And, dependence on, quick and easy, convenient food. I'm not in her situation, but I definitely have turned to that a lot myself, and, delivery restaurants, I know, and takeout restaurants doing a heavy business too, Emily.
Yes, absolutely. And that, you know, we just talked about those categories, right, for comfort food, that, you know, intersection of convenient and indulgent and nostalgic, right, that a take-home mac and cheese, you know, hits all those buttons. And to think, right, of the extra pressure of being an essential worker, that as we think about how this pandemic has played out differently based upon your job, based upon your family status, that, you know, to thank Lisa so much for her service, right, to be in this position where she's in that essential line, that I'm so glad she's finding food that still feeds her family, makes everyone happy, and is getting us through this.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking about food in 2020, food during the pandemic. Emily Contois is with us, assistant professor of media studies at the University of Tulsa. You could still join in. What is your comfort food. 800-642-1234. Is there a snack that you reach for maybe more often than you'd like? Is there a meal you like to cook or buy or do takeout, whatever, that really comforts you? What is it? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Now, Emily, I know people look a lot at the future of food when we're through all of this. Hopefully that is soon. Will we have established new patterns? Maybe we're cooking at home more and we're happy to stay that way? Or are we all just going to be eager to go back into restaurants? I know we can't predict the future, but what are you looking for?
I just did a sort of whole assignment with my students tracking their pandemic food ways and like what they missed the most. And it was restaurants. They all miss restaurants so much. They're so excited to be able to go back, not just to experience, you know, the full, you know, takeout is wonderful, but it's not the same depending upon right where you're ordering your food as being there in person. So I think there will definitely, right, we will not only eat at restaurants, but we will appreciate them so much more. But we've also seen trends, you know, changing in shopping patterns, the idea that online ordering or curbside pickup, that some of these services that have been customized to the context of the pandemic, they might become more of a part of the menu of how we shop and of what we expect from the food industry. So it is very, very interesting to see how that will shake out in ways that might make for some really meaningful changes for consumers that maybe we wanted for a long time, that will make it easier, sort of like Lisa, right, to be able to pick up a healthy meal for your family on the way home from work, that there might be some changes that make eating, you know, well and joyfully and with our families easier than before.
Let's bring on another caller now. Michelle is with us in Osseo. Michelle, hi. Michelle, are you there? I don't think we have Michelle. Gave us a note. Oh, there you are. Hi. What did you want to tell us?
Well, we have been doing a lot of activities outside, social distancing. You know, we're fishing a lot this summer. One of the places we fished has an overrun of bass, and so we ended up with a lot of fish to cook. And what I ended up doing was baking it with, like, Old Bay and dill, and taking the meat off and keeping it, and then using that to make crab cakes. And we have our own hens, and so the eggs are awesome, and making different recipes, trying to develop different recipes to make crab cakes.
Michelle, thank you so much. When life gives you bass, you make bass cakes. But I love that, Emily, because it's not just about the food here, but it's about the safe, socially distanced activity, in this case, fishing, that makes it all possible.
Absolutely. I think another one of those changes some people experienced during the pandemic was maybe having the time and the space to start gardening, right? To grow herbs on the kitchen counter. And then I love this story of having the experience, you know, go out and fish, to go out and to be able to procure and produce food in a different way. So what a great story. I'd love to try her bass cakes. That's fascinating.
It sounds really good. Love the Old Bay seasoning. Tanya joins us next in Madison. Tanya, hi.
Hi, I've been eating an awful lot of Blue Moon ice cream.
Ooh, now, is Blue Moon, was that like a flavor for you as a kid, Tanya, or is this an adult discovery for you?
It is definitely a flavor from my childhood.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Madison has chocolate shop ice cream, and if you take the Zanzibar chocolate and the Blue Moon, that's called Dark Side of the Moon, and it is delicious. And another plug for Quick Trip, they have Blue Moon ice cream for less than $3 for a small tub. And it's soft and creamy and delicious, and it's a comfort food.
Tanya, thank you so much. I can't believe I didn't bring that up. Emily, ice cream is, in a lot of ways, I think for a lot of people, a big comfort food or emotional eating food.
Absolutely. I will out my husband that is his food, right? Ice cream and cake. They have been in our house on a weekly basis these past months. So can definitely relate and really want to try the exact type that she's describing. Sounds amazing.
Thanks a lot for that call, Tanya. Emily, in our last few moments, you know, food, it's clear it isn't just about the nutrients we're taking in. There's a lot in our identity and our society, too, in the foods we choose to eat.
Absolutely. I think one of the special things about comfort food is that it communicates both this feeling of like social and family connection, that it can be about belonging, right? With our memories, with people who maybe we can't see right now. I know some of us might be really distraught that we don't get to have a normal Thanksgiving this year to share that meal together. And so comfort food is, it's about belonging and that loneliness together, that it's able to help us navigate both of those really complex feelings. And so, you know, just like any food experience in which we can read so much deep, complex meaning, comfort food gives us as well. And so, as I said, I hope everyone is finding that solace, that comfort in food during this really difficult time.
Emily, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Emily Contois is an assistant professor of media studies at the University of Tulsa. Her research looks at the connections between food, the body, health, and identity in contemporary U.S. media and popular culture. She has a new book out. It's called Diners, Dudes, and Diets, How Gender and Power Collide in Food, Media, and Culture. We should probably talk to her about that sometime. We talked about 2020 through the lens of food.